And welcome back to the Odd Man Rush, our NHL podcast here on CBSSports.com. This is Greg Simaluka, and I'm joined once again by Wes Goldstein and Aaron Brown. How's everybody doing?
Hello.
Doing well.
All right.
Our new digs.
Yes, yes, that's right. We are finally starting to get settled into our new office down here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And this will be our first podcast in the new building, and we look forward to the new building offering us some advantages and things that we couldn't do in the old building. So stay tuned for some of those new enhancements and features to the Odd Man Rush as we get going. And hey, speaking of getting going, let's get this podcast rolling with our first topic. We're going to talk about the Montreal Canadiens. Lost 8 of their last 12, and we may be looking at a goalie controversy brewing. Well, actually, I mean, we can't even say it's brewing. It's already there, and it's been there for a long time. So I guess the question is, what does Montreal do here? Because you can't afford to keep both. You have to. How do you work the playing situation? Wes, let me get your thoughts first.
Yeah, I think the issue is not necessarily keeping both, because both players are in their first contracts and they're restricted free agents after the summer. So their raises between the two of them probably could work financially for the Canadiens. But I think the bigger issue is who the Canadiens want to put their trust in going down the road. Halak's 24, Price is 21. He is the franchise goalie, presumably. He's the guy they invested a lot by drafting him fifth overall. And I think there is a lot of interest in the organization in justifying their pick and their faith in Price. So I think they want to give him every opportunity. But Halak right now is playing better, much better than Price. And the Canadiens are in a life and death struggle for a playoff spot. So that's where the controversy comes from.
Yeah, to me, it seems just from the games that I've seen Montreal play, when Carey Price is on his game, he can run a streak that is better than anything Halak can do at the top of his level. But if he's not at that level, he's very ordinary.
Yeah, and
Halak is more that steady as she goes. Each game, you know, you pretty much know what you're going to get. You're going to get solid goaltending and goals that are going to be scored are going to be scored. Whereas Price maybe makes those saves if he's in form.
Yeah, and that's part of the issue with him. I think, you know, Price has shown, I mean, the reason they drafted him fifth overall was because he's a very talented goalie. He's won in the World Juniors. He's won the American Hockey League. He's done everything he should up to this level.
Right.
And he came in as a flash in the pan, really his first year with the Canadiens in the playoffs as a rookie. Things have settled down, and he's young. There's time to evolve, certainly. But right now, you know, there's a lot of concern around the organization that the team seems to play with more confidence. If that's some sort of intangible you can measure,
sure.
But it seems to be there. And I talked to some of the players after they played here Tuesday night. Obviously, they're denying it, but there's certainly a different sense when they're in front of Halak. It's maybe a calmer effect. You know, they're not out of games and they're playing a little bit different. Their record reflects it. Then again, Halak's record also comes against teams that are at the bottom of the standings, so you have to weigh that as well.
Right. 14-8-1, 2.43 goals against, 9.27 save percentage since December 10th, 8-4-1 with 3 shutouts. But like you said, and I don't have that exact breakdown right now, but just knowing how the season's gone for Montreal, he has had, you know, the lesser tasks, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And he's also never had a chance to play after he loses. Price has been given a better shot. And this is one of the issues, too, that actually came up this week, because Price loses a game, he may get a chance to come back and atone for the next game. Halak wins, he stays in. Halak loses, he's out. And, you know, so again, it, to a lot of people, that seems to show the Canadiens really want Price to take hold of the job. But there's questions whether he can actually, you know, handle the pressure going forward of being in that market. And, you know, maybe it's time to trade him rather than trade Halak. Or the other people say, like, Halak has his maximum trade value coming up to the deadline. So, you know, if you want to get something, now's the time to move him.
Yep.
Yeah, and I was thinking with the thing with Price, and I know we were high on Price a couple seasons ago
Jesus
when he came.
Price.
Exactly.
That's what they called him.
Jesus Price, yeah. And I think you looked at the talent and what could be, but, you know, we were looking at a guy, like you said, he was under 21. And I can't help but wonder if rushing him, despite all his accomplishments at that point, was, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Was it the wrong thing? You look at a guy like Halak, who didn't have the accolades Price had. He stewed a little bit more in the AHL. Mm-hmm. Maybe by doing that, he Let's face it. When you look at the numbers, he's the more consistent goalie. He doesn't Correct. Necessarily get the chances Price does. But, I think he ran off a four-game winning streak a little earlier this year. And you know, Price on the flip side, it doesn't seem like he's really been able to do that. So I don't envy Bob Gainey's position. I think the question is, are they – if they're going to – go forward with Price, I think there almost needs to be a time period for them to say, you know, if he screws up, he screws up. We just need him to develop, and we're looking long term. Like you
like
said,
to
he's,
make a statement.
Yeah, well, to basically say, you know what, we need to get our, you know, house in order here. This guy is the goalie of the future,
right.
But, you know, we need to develop him properly.
Yeah.
And, you know, if that means that he's going to go through some struggles to learn how to, you know, overcome, you know, the tough games, become more consistent, you know, the fans up there need to be prepared for some losses and, you know, times out of the playoffs.
Ooh,
but I was just going to say,
are you
that's
aware
not
that we're
happen.
Talking about the Montreal fans?
I was going to say
here?
That, but that will not happen. So, you know, if the plan in Montreal is must win, then, you know, they almost have to go with Halak. He may not be the star studded guy. And you know what? Maybe if you trade Price, you get some stars in return that really do make a difference up
right.
front. And so maybe they could trade Price for some size because they need some of that.
Do they not have an example of this having worked to close to perfection as you can, just, you know, a little bit south of them in Pittsburgh, right? Because, I mean, if we take a look at Fleury's early career, I mean, it's almost the same amount of time. I mean, obviously Fleury's ahead in terms of years in the league, but yeah. But from where Fleury was at this same stage for Price, there were a lot of these same questions. When he's on, he's unbelievable.
Right.
He makes some
Absolutely.
Incredible
Absolutely.
Saves.
Yeah.
But when he's not. There, Pittsburgh just does not have a chance of winning this game.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree. I think that's a very, very good comparison. But the thing is, you have to remember that when Fleury's game went to the next level, there was like Crosby, Malkin, and Staal in the lineup.
Yeah,
yeah.
Agreed.
So, you know,
and it
agreed.
Wasn't Montreal, and people in Pittsburgh were well aware that they were not going to be.
But he wasn't losing games.
No, I realize that. But, you know, and the thing is, you know, with Price, let's face it, there's a lot of expectation. Halak is a good goalie, and people recognize him as a good goalie, kind of a good backup, solid, dependable.
Yeah, sure.
But nobody sees him necessarily as the star quality guy. Price mm-hmm. comes in fifth overall pick. Bob Gainey personally has a lot invested because yep. of his choice. That's a high pick. You can't afford to miss out on those kind of picks.
Sure.
And the thing is, you get Price coming in there with
Hal Montoya. Excuse me. Sorry.
I understand. I've got a
cold.
My thing, my cough is Hugh Jessamine. Yeah. But
do you want to run down the whole litany of these that we can throw out?
Maybe Dan Blackburn?
That could be next week's podcast.
That's a different issue. He injured and his career ended.
Yeah, yes.
But they started him very early.
They did.
And that was, I mean, I don't think they had much of a choice at that time. I think Richter was hurt.
Yeah.
But still, that was, and it's funny, you talk about the Fleury comparisons. I'm a little bit seeing the Blackburn comparisons because he was highly touted when he came out, but he was very, very young, and his career was destroyed really quickly.
Yeah.
He just, his confidence was shot.
It was a
and that's
freak
what,
injury, though. I mean, you know,
he threw
working
shoulder,
out.
Was it?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. I
a
mean,
shoulder.
So, I think a weight maybe landed on his shoulder.
Something weird.
I don't remember exactly. But, I mean, he's back with the organization doing a lot of stuff. I know he's got a goaltending coaching camp that he does. A company that he's involved in.
He's working off the contract.
Yeah.
And
he's been in
20 years of community relations, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been involved with a lot of the stuff that the Rangers are doing. I know they just did a clinic for coaches, and he was involved in that and working with other coaches on how to, you know, work with goalies and stuff like that. So it was good to see, you know, I mean, because I think if you were a Ranger fan around the time, or even still are, you kind of felt bad for the kid, you
right.
know. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if he, you know, any injury that ends a promising career is tough.
No, absolutely, for sure. But you know, they had him. They I don't know, you know, if he was actually that good even the time he played. But
yeah. Anyway. No, but I guess the point I was trying to make is when the goalies are very young, you do have to be careful because I think we all know that they don't get into their prime for a little while. And,
right, but the thing
you know, is... If you destroy their confidence too early or they get injured, you've just shot yourself in the foot.
No, I understand that, and I agree with that. But I think there's two things. Like I said, they invested a lot in Price, yes, Gainey personally, yes, and everything. They expected him to come in. He had this resume with the Olympic goal, with the World Junior goal. With the AHL. Yep. And plus the thing is, they also looked at him as the second coming of Patrick Roy. Because Patrick Roy won a Stanley Cup at 20. Mm-hmm. And then his career, I mean, so he was the exception, but this guy has the same lanky, you know, way of playing goaltender. Mm-hmm. He's the next guy. And he does all this. He wins, you know, the Calder trophy in the AHL, comes to the NHL, they get to the playoffs, and then, you know, things happen. I mean, the thing is, with a lot of these kids, like, I mean, the pressure is not only on the ice, the pressure is off the ice. Let's face it.
Yeah.
In
Montreal?
Goes on. So.
There's ad infinitum.
Fans in Montreal would just be a little bit more calm, which we know is not possible, maybe this wouldn't be an issue.
I was trying to say before, before the Institute of Shootouts, the old saying in Montreal was, they love you, win or tie. Now it's win. Otherwise,
yes.
They'll burn you on the cross,
yeah.
All right. So let's stick with goaltenders because Montreal's not the only situation that's dealing with goaltender issues or even potential decision-making problems because we've got Nashville, right, who has mm-hmm. two goalies that they kind of almost have to, for the second year in a row, right? We were talking about this last week,
mm-hmm.
I think the end of last week as we were prepping for today's podcast and... And so we have that. You've got some other rumors involving goaltenders. Is Marty Turco, you know, on the block? And if he is, does anybody want him?
I think he has a no trade clause, though.
I haven't seen that he has a no trade clause.
I know it's
the last season.
He's unrestricted free agent, but
yeah.
He hasn't played very well. He hasn't played very well really like 2.5 years.
Yeah, pretty much since the they got to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
That was kind of like the height because
Mike Smith.
Yeah. Exactly.
Actually played really well and played well enough to get traded, you know, to Tampa Bay. I mean, he was absolutely better.
That worked out great.
We're not picking up Mike Smith. no beating the dead horse anymore.
Yes. Well, I mean, he can just blame you for selecting him in fantasy.
I thought you had Smith. No, I would never.
I thought he was one of your
He was the one that he has like the – no, he's the red flag all the way. I would not – No. Sorry, Mike.
All right, so what? Let's get back to Nashville, though. And, you know, they've got Ellis, and he's – you know, doing the job that he does. Is he their goaltender of the future?
Well, actually, Barry Trotz, their coach, has been basically like doing like a rotation basis almost all season.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Almost one for one each time. Last week he said he wants to let Pekka Rinne get into a bit of a run and work with him. They haven't played very well lately. They've lost, I guess, 3 or 4 in a row now, and they're slipping in the standings, like down to the bottom. It's interesting because the Western Conference race is getting to the point where it's starting to look at the bottom like the Eastern Conference race.
Yeah.
Not as many teams quite in that little bottleneck, but it's getting there too. And, you know, Nashville, I think, you know, Rinne will get the chance over the next little while, but I think ultimately he'll go back. I think he likes having two goalies. I think they're both reasonably priced for Nashville as well. So I think they like the idea of keeping the two goalies and seeing like who pushes each other to go forward.
But I think they are both they're both unrestricted though.
Rinne, didn't they sign Rinne?
I don't think they did.
I thought Rinne was extended, but I could be wrong.
No, the last time I went and was checking contracts and whatnot, the last I saw the two of them were unrestricted.
Unrestricted.
And it was going to be similar. Was it Mason and Ellis a couple of years ago where Nashville was forced into saying, who do we go with? Ellis had just had the really strong playoff that year, I think, against Detroit. And they said, okay, we'll sign Ellis. And then, you know, of course, Rinne comes in and unseats him. I'm starting to think it's a tradition in Nashville to develop some goalies. And I was actually looking to say, well, okay, if the Predators traded one of these guys, I would assume it would be Dan Ellis just because Rinne is
He seems to be the guy that's a little more in favor there, yeah.
Yeah, and they have Chet Picard in their minor league system. Yeah. It's his rookie year in the AHL, so I don't know that they're ready to rush him right away, but I'm thinking, oh my gosh, are we going to come down to this in a year or two, depending on how long one of these guys signs, whether it's Rene or Ellis. One of them will sign. But I can just imagine we're going to see this down the road again, because if, you know, Picard does well, I think he's done okay in the AHL. Nothing, you know, to write home about.
But
just
you're
yet,
saying
but
it could end up like a situation that's in Boston right now, because they signed Thomas to a 4-year deal, and quite honestly, Rask has been the better goalie this year, and much better. I mean, Thomas has had really good moments, like Vezina, the kind of moments he had in the Vezina year, but not enough of them. And I think, you know, maybe deep down, Brian Burke is ruining the fact that he chose him over Craig Anderson for this team, because I think Anderson's been a better goalie this year too, better and quick.
Trying to think of some other guys that are. Actually, speaking of Mason, jumping around teams here. I was thinking of the Blues, but the Blues were Corey Schneider. There was a rumor out there that they were looking at him. Davidson was scouting, you know, and kind of going back to the price thing. Here's a guy that, you know, he has no choice but to be in the AHL because of the Longo situation in Vancouver, and he's just tearing it up. I think he's 2 seasons already, and he's tops 50 wins in the AHL.
Really?
He's been really solid. So I think, you know, there's no way he's ever going to be in Vancouver as a starter.
Right,
so someone's going to grab him, and it's, you know, I wonder where he might end up. But the
Also depends on the price too, because, you know,
exactly.
What does Vancouver want for him?
Yeah.
I mean,
I
mean, he's been around down their organization 3 or 4 years, so he's got to be 22, 23.
Yeah.
So, I mean, technically, if he becomes an unrestricted free agent, somebody does make him an offer, Vancouver has to match it. So he might have an earlier out than he might have. But you're right. He's not going to supplant Luongo there.
And, no.
A lot of these guys, look.
Not even as a back. He's not even going to get in as a backup.
Right,
that's a waste of talent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't want him. So you have like Andrew Raycroft sitting on the bench for you.
Yeah.
And that's what you need. But a lot of these guys.
I think the rumor for Schneider was that the Blues were scouting him and that the Canucks were thinking we'd like David Backes back. But the Blues came back and said, no, get that out of your head. It's not happening.
Sure. An NHL roster player for somebody who still hasn't cracked an NHL.
I don't think it's that he's – I don't think it's Schneider's fault that he hasn't cracked an NHL
roster. No. I understand that, but I know what you mean.
There is unknown.
Fair market value.
Because you're looking, like, the reason that they'd be interested in Schneider is because Ty Conklin's in a 1-year deal. So, like, he's going to be, you know, they will, you know, maybe they'll move a younger guy into the backup role, give him 30 games next year, and as Mason basically, I guess, has 1 or 2 years left in his deal. So you get him to play more. But, like, in Luongo's a 70-game goalie when he's healthy, nobody gets a chance to play.
Yeah.
Maybe I can see that. But Backes right now is a central part of their lineup, and they're in a play. I can't believe they're in a playoff push again.
Yep.
You know, like, I mean, I remember
we've had this conversation many times before, and we'd love to call it parity, but I think it's mediocrity more than anything else. There just are a lot of teams that aren't playing well. For long stretches at a time, and then maybe they have a good stretch, you know. But that's why we've got a 6-13 in the East, and an abridged version of that in the West, that are all within striking distance of the final playoff spots.
Well, in St. Louis' case, a coaching change obviously made a difference. It really did, because I mean, let's face it, you know, they lost their first couple of games after Davis Payne took over from Andy Murray, but they've been 6-3-1 since then.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually right back in the race.
Even look at Ottawa. Fire the goaltending coach.
Yeah,
they don't even have their starter, and they're tearing it up.
Yeah, that's kind of odd too, isn't it?
Yeah.
They brought up Brodeur for 2 games as Mike Brodeur.
Yeah.
Right. He won both games, and they said, okay, no, we don't need you anymore. So we'll get Brian Elliott, and he's won like 5 straight games or something, you know? It's like
clearly, it was the goaltending coach.
Yeah, it had to be.
Because they, you know, they have that much.
It
influence.
Had to be because, you know, he couldn't edit the video properly. Or
right.
Something. I don't know.
Exactly.
But it's like Pittsburgh this week. They called up this guy. Who is this against the Ranger?
Oh,
the
Russian guy.
No, the Ranger guy got this guy Connor. Do you remember? He scored 2 goals.
Chris
against
Connor.
Oh, Chris,
Con-
Chris
oh, Connor.
I'm sorry.
He scored 2 goals against the Ranger. They sent him back the next day.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for your help.
Yeah. Like, what do I got to do to stay here, right?
Well, they figure, you know, they're playing the Rangers. It's a good time to get some rookies. Sometimes they don't have to worry about losing the game, and you know, see what these guys are made of.
Yes. And John Tortorella. See, like, who can have John Tortorella explode?
Yeah. Mostly the ones wearing the same jersey that he's.
No, I understand, but I've noticed now there's a pattern with Tortorella. It seems to take. like three or four games. Like he lets it, you know, like I'm not going to dissect this. Yeah, I'm not saying anything.
Exploding is not going to do anything to help us get ready for the next game. And then every once in a while, yes, okay, I need to explode.
Yeah, let it go.
All right, so I'm going to throw some names at you, some more goalies, and just real quickly, let's kind of say moving, not moving, and perhaps a brief bit as to why or why not. So let's look at Florida's Thomas Vokoun to start it off.
Not moving.
Can't move him. As much as they probably need to get the contract off their books, can't move him.
Because of the contract?
Right, absolutely.
They can't, well, they
two
can't
more
move
years.
Well, but I think he's playing so well.
That's the other thing, too.
And Clemenson has been bust.
And they're in a place.
Right.
And
yes.
They're in,
play
they're in that, you know, 6 through 13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because I don't think that over the next couple weeks, I know a lot of GMs have said, you know, well, we're going to use this time leading up to the Olympic break to really decide. But considering, you know, how many teams there are like just bunched in together in that Eastern Conference, I don't see how those next 2 weeks, unless a team loses every single game or wins every single game,
I don't
see how it's going to sort itself out.
But it's going to have to because there's a trading freeze during the Olympics. And
I know.
When you come back, there's like three games.
Yeah.
And then the deadline. Yeah. So
you
have to make up your mind right now and figure it out. You know,
exactly.
I mean, if you're waiting for those three games to,
let's see what happens.
Right?
You know, because those 6 points could be,
they actually could, you know. But
I mean, do you think, like right now, again, what you said 6 through 13, they're all bunched. I want to say it's like
within 2 points.
Within two points, okay. Over the next 2 weeks, before we shut down for the Olympics, do you think that there are going to be that many teams?
Any
still?
Separation?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You may have one or two drop off from that group, but not by a whole lot.
Right.
I mean,
so
just based on the number of games played. I mean, let's say there's 6 games,
right?
You know, in that stretch, you're talking about a maximum of 12 points if you lost everyone and then everybody else won.
Yeah.
So cut that in half, and you're dealing with 6 points.
But you pick up points in shootouts and loss and all the time.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know that it's going to be a very much. I mean, where people are in that 6 through 13 is going to change, but I don't think very many teams that were out of it that are in it will be completely out of it at that point.
No, for sure. I mean, the thing is, you might, instead of the gap being 2 points, the gap between 13 and 6 might be 4 points, 5 points.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's again, that's like a 2 or 3 game winning streak. Everything turns around.
And that can flip just as easily after the deadline.
But at what point, though, do you sit there and say, yes, we feel really good, we're going to make the playoffs, but we're not a Stanley Cup championship quality team, and still make moves to say better next year, the year after, and the year after that?
That's all well and good, and I think that's part of the way teams will look at it. But the other factor everybody has to look at is some teams are desperate to make the playoffs.
Just the playoffs.
They have to, you know, Florida's one team.
I was going to cough and say Florida.
Right, no, but Nashville.
Florida, Nashville.
Phoenix,
yep.
Let's face it, Los Angeles. Yeah. I mean, these teams aren't locks yet, you know.
Sure.
As well, like, certainly Phoenix, L.A., and Nashville, they've played really well this year. They surprisingly looking like playoff teams, but they're not locks. In those markets, getting a first round, getting a second round is very important to excite the fan base.
Right.
So it's not only about are you a Stanley Cup contender, what are your short-term goals? And then for some, it's, you know, like Toronto, we're going to sell out if we win one game a year, which seemed that
so
way.
So that's the thing is, you know, maybe it's dissecting which of these teams, you know, really need to make it and which of them can afford to do that other style where, okay, say, hey, you know what, this is great that we're in contention. And let's face it, I mean, with the way some of these teams are playing, winning some nights, losing some nights, obviously, what they're putting out there, they can't be afraid to lose because it's not getting the job done on a grand level. So, don't be afraid to pull that trigger, move some guys, get some future considerations back, and see what it does, because there's a good chance that they can play the same turd of 500 that, you know, the players you had were doing. So, I'm curious as to see which teams are going to employ that strategy as we get to the deadline.
Well, I mean, that's the, you know, the $1 million question, or $64 million, whatever the price is on that,
inflation.
Well, it all depends how much room you have under
it
the salary
cap. It was $64 million, but now that we've got the cap, it's only
$57 million. And that's what it comes down to in a lot of cases, too. It's like, you know, the big debate, like you said, I mean, you know, the prize and everybody expects to go is Kovalchuk. And, you know, we're talking about...
Oh, wonderful segue. Excellent segue.
Okay.
We're right there. Well, we did have other goalies, but that's fine.
Yeah,
but
he's the star of the show, let's face it. You know, there's no other issue. It's where he's going to go, is he going to go, when he's going to go. And, you know, there's a lot of factors to consider. And, you know, one of them, I was talking to a scout from Western Conference team at the game, and we're talking about this, and he said, you know what, forget the money and forget how much it's going to take to sign him, and you know that he may go to the KHL in the summer. Mm-hmm. Forget all that. Think of where he fits and where he'd be a good hockey fit. And there's not that many teams because, you know, Boston, they talk about him. Boston,
not happening.
No, but Boston is a very structured defensive.
Yes. Julius,
yeah.
Okay, Kovalchuk basically does whatever he wants. You know, when he plays, the coach says, you play your style, we'll make sure the other guys are going to adapt to it, you know? That's not going to happen in Boston. Wouldn't happen necessarily even in Chicago because...
See, that's where I would think he would end up.
No, but...
only for
Quenneville, Quenneville plays... these guys are very disciplined. I mean, as explosive and as exciting as these Blackhawks are, you watch the way they move the puck, you watch the way they retrieve the puck. They have a system and they stick to it. That's why they're winning.
Yeah.
Kovalchuk, you know, would he be able to adapt? I mean... Maybe, maybe not. But, you know,
I'm wondering if the fact that he's not in Atlanta would make him much more amenable to that kind of system.
You know, the thing is, I don't think he wants to leave Atlanta. He just wants a lot of money to stay in Atlanta.
Okay.
And, you know.
But I would think winning at this point has to be playing into that role, too.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely. That's why Don Waddell went out and got the players to try and you know, Kovalchuk was absolutely kind of happy. From what I understand from, you know, people who talk to him about their moving in the right direction. And they've been a playoff bubble team this year, so maybe – and he's been a big part of it.
And he's captain now for a little bit.
Right, and from what I understand, you know, he really enjoys living in Atlanta and the anonymity of it rather than going to a big market.
Sure, sure.
So
there's
a lot of advantages. He just had, you know, a young baby not long ago. There's a lot of
Most
things.
Most babies are young. So that's,
no, yeah, right.
It's good,
I know.
It's good that it worked out that way.
Say, yeah, okay, no, but you know what I'm saying. He likes – part of it, but there's also, he believes, apparently according to his agent, Brian Burke, you heard the comment from him a couple of days ago, he went on a Toronto radio station, he said, I'm not getting in the bidding for Kovalchuk because I heard a rumor that he turned down a 10-year deal for $80 to $85 million. He said, I'm not, now, Burke.
Was that to stay in Atlanta? That was what he turned down?
That's what he turned down from the Thrash.
Right, so he don't love Atlanta that much.
I think he wants a seven-figure deal. Ovechkin has a seven-figure deal. And I think he believes that he is worth every bit as much as Ovechkin. At least, you know, I mean, Ovechkin's deal was, what, $124 million or something? I think it was a 13-year deal.
Yeah.
I think Kovalchuk is looking at like a $100 million type of deal for 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money to commit.
And it's a lot of years. It's a lot of years.
Yeah. Absolutely, that
that would scare me more than anything.
That's what Burke said. You know, I think he wasn't even that hesitant on the cost. He said he's not ready to commit that kind of money to that kind of term.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I would especially think but can Atlanta even do something like that? I mean,
with
this
their
is
ownership
a,
situation.
I was just and there's, I mean, for all the relocation talk we've heard, you know, in 10 years is he even playing in Atlanta? But I think the reason I thought that if there's going to be a bidder for him and there's going to be if he's going to be moved at the deadline, which I imagine he might have to be because
he will have to be because you can't let him walk.
Yeah, the reason I kind of see Chicago as a fit, whether you know, whether he fits into their system or not, is one, Chicago is desperate to dump salary. They need to dump salary for next year. The package that Atlanta would want, it's already kind of been said that, you know, count Boston out of the mix because they're not giving up one of their first round picks.
Right.
And that would have to be included. But the kind of guys that Chicago would be willing to get rid of, I mean, you hear the names I keep hearing are Cam Barker, Patrick Sharp, and Chris Versteeg. Mm-hmm. That you got some two good young talents. You've got a veteran who's picked up his game the last couple seasons. Throw in a pick or something. It dumps the salary off of Chicago's payrolls. It gets Atlanta a big package, which they kind of feel they need in return. Maybe there's a pick in there. And then Chicago doesn't have to worry about his contract next year. He can go. And I think that with the cap crunch starting to hit in Chicago, there's been the talk that they feel they must win. There are no other opportunities that it really could start coming apart next year. I don't know to what degree, but if this is the year, they've got to make the move this year. And the thought of having a team, Taze, Kane, Hossa, and Kovalchuk
There's only one puck.
There's only one puck.
And that's
You know what we said about Detroit, but Detroit found a way to make it work.
Detroit doesn't count in any conversation that's related to hockey because they play in a different world.
Okay. I know. But the other thing about Kovalchuk too is that he could end up back in Atlanta and get that deal or wherever he wants that money. I mean, here's the thing.
What you say in theory makes a lot of sense. And, you know, that's the kind of thing they've been expressing. And people look at it. But the thing is this. Chicago, and this is what you have to remember. This is a very, very, very tight group of players.
Yes.
You remember last year. I mean, even before, you know, Talon got dumped and whatever happened this summer. But you remember when Talon's dad died?
Yeah, they all went.
I mean, there is something about these young guys. They're all playing together. Now, it may be that when the season's over, some of them will get better offers. They won't be able to re-sign all of them. You know, that's the way the business goes. But right now, this is a very tight team that doesn't need an extra power play score, that doesn't need another high-end offensive player because they have it, and they can do it, and they produce it. They have everything. And to take a chance of bringing in somebody who is so, you know, self-centered, basically, in terms, this is what I want, whatever it is.
And to risk
the chemistry at this point, I think, is really, really dangerous.
You could say that about Hossa, too. That he's to some degree he was.
Didn't cost him any players.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't give up anything.
They didn't have to break up their lineup. He added.
But taking away.
If
this was the summer, and we're talking about Kovalchuk going to
different story. Exactly. Yeah.
The Blackhawks.
But
then,
I think the Blackhawks. There has to be some sort of thinking in that locker room. They know that there are salary cap issues. This team is not going to stay together, and they need to make these moves.
They're going
to
lose those salaries. One way or the other over the summer where those guys leave or they'll lose Kovalchuk.
No, I don't think some of these guys are free agents. I think these
Then they'll have to move them for nothing. I think what I'm saying is I think they probably you know, they're really risking their they have a very, very good chance of winning the Stanley Cup right now. They really do. And I think to mess with that lineup right now unnecessarily, it really is, if it ain't broken, don't fix it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, if they got a goalie, you know, and again,
It's more of a need versus want.
I don't think adding that's the element they have to add. As much as it seems like the right, and it does. And also, let's face it, their former assistant GM Rick Dudley is now the assistant. He knows the system. He knows their prospects and everything. All the elements are there, but does it make sense?
I totally get where you're coming from. He will end up in
Broadway. Glenn Sather will find a
really?
Way.
Really? It'll just be Gavrik and Kovalchuk playing.
Yeah, I think he'll wave Roosevelt in red and eat those contracts.
Jeez.
I tell you what, if that's the case, Christmas has come early.
Well, you say that now. The Ranger fans say that all the time. Yeah, hey, we got so and so and.
No, I'm talking about the waving of
Redmond
and Roosevelt.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Kovalchuk.
I'm not worried about
Kovalchuk.
I'm not worried about that. I mean, if he does, he does. I mean, you know, same conversation about Gabrick over the summer, you know, and he's turned, I mean, he's in a little bit of a funk right now, but the guy.
Like everybody else.
You can't blame him. And he's carried them, you know, for a good portion of the season with his scoring. So. Mm-hmm. He's proven that a guy that has had offensive success elsewhere can come into New York and have offensive success
until New York rubs off on him. takes a couple of months, you know, before he realizes. First couple, he doesn't realize where
he is. Yeah.
And then December says, Christmas trees are rocking.
Just like it is in Minnesota. Yeah. No big deal.
Except they probably curse a lot more in New York and get a lot more obscene. When you lose.
I haven't spent enough time in Minnesota to have made that to confirm or deny that statement.
They're very nice people up there.
But defensively, you know, they certainly could use without those contracts at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they have enough, I think. You know, they're willing to accept the growing pains of their young defensemen. So, and I would be as well, knowing that the mistakes are not coming from $5 to $6 million a year cap hits.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, all right, so let's I'll jump
Cross
really quick now. Yes, let's go to Marty Baron. Do you want to go over him first?
No.
Not crossing anything?
Oh, yeah. I guess they
before,
are.
Yeah, before
well,
we head to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to. Yeah, I wanted to clean up those two.
We'll go out
those
to the Long
goalies.
Island
yeah.
first. Okay.
I wanted to clean up those other two goaltenders before we moved on to the Cross the River combo.
My thinking on Baron is I think. I doubt they listen to the Odd Man Rush, but you know, maybe they're listening to my suggestion that they just stick with the three goalies, because I think Rolison's still getting the playing time. I think they're easing DiPietro back in,
right?
So
which they don't really have a choice.
Yeah,
no matter.
Which is smart. I mean, as much as they could probably get something for Biron, they are still in the playoff race, and you know, I just. For that team, I would be so paranoid about saying, okay, we're going to go with two goalies, and then DiPietro, bam, just,
the only thing,
know,
is
whether he's a backup or starter, whatever, still, you know.
But Biron's like actually played pretty poorly all year. And like, I mean, he's what, 2-11 or something, 2-11-2, I think. His numbers are awful. Rolison is carrying the mail, so if DiPietro isn't, you know, Rolison would play, yeah, it's a chance. I quite honestly, I don't know how much they would actually get for Biron at this point. You know, somebody... You know, maybe somebody goes back down. Look, even in Washington right now, there's some issues because Theodore got hurt and Varlamov is gone. So they're going with Newvert, and they brought up an AHL goalie. So maybe they need somebody as a backup somewhere there.
I mean, and if you're a team like the Islanders, I mean, grabbing an additional draft pick, regardless of where it is,
it's
going to help.
They need
bodies.
Right.
They need bodies. You know, they're not in a terrible place right now with, you know, all the young players that they have that are actually already in the NHL those that are, you know, a step or two away. So just continually stockpiling up, you know, those picks, or whether it's a role player prospect, whatever it is, then that's one less pick you have to use on a role player type draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things they can do, and some team like you just mentioned, you know, maybe really in a position where, hey, you know, we just need an NHL guy.
It's going to be a lot. Yeah, something like Biron, I could see being one of those last-minute decisions, you know, like at noon.
Right.
I guess with the Islanders' case, the fact that they are in the playoff mix at this point, and we were talking before about teams that really could energize their fan base, I think, you know, some will credit Greg. Greg said, oh, they may actually do something this year. I wasn't so, you know, I didn't believe that. But you know what? The goaltending was their Achilles heel last year, and it just, if they're this close, you know, just, I see Biron as an insurance policy for them.
Maybe. It may end up that way because they may not find a taker for him either.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
True. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We won't know whether
we always want to keep him.
Yes. Exactly.
But if they don't, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing because again, with the way DiPietro
is, second goalie needs a break, we've got Biron.
That's right.
All right, so now we can shoot across talk a little bit about the New Jersey Devils situation as it relates to Patrice Cormier and the suspension for the hit to the head on Michael Tam in a QMJHL.
We'll let him.
I actually got it right. So
I like the French version better. We'll go with that.
Greg was correct.
Yeah. So, you know, have we all seen the hit? I assume we've all seen the hit.
Yeah, that was gruesome.
It was
gruesome, and it was his second in a not-so-long amount of time.
He hit a Swedish kid in the
junior. Right,
in
the junior. Right, so.
Rodin, I believe. Rodin.
You know, the reason why we're bringing it up, there's a lot of issues at play with this, right? There's the hits to the head concern. There's the repeat offender concerns. There's the suspension situation. There's the response to the suspension. And then even from as it goes all the way up, he's a New Jersey Devil product, which is how this is, you know, relates back to the Devils. And Lou Lamoriello was, I guess, at one point in time contemplating moving him to the AHL. Is that correct? There was
speculation that before I think the suspension came down.
Yeah, there was speculation, but Lamoriello never said that. I think Lamoriello's initial entry into the whole controversy was kind of defend him so the police wouldn't get involved because they were concerned there was going to be
exactly.
And he was saying it's not necessary, basically, to go that route, that we can handle it within, you know, the confines of the hockey world type of thing. Mm-hmm. So then when the suspension came down, which everybody anticipated, you know, listen, when you see that kind of video and you see it over and you see a kid convulsing on the ice,
something's going to come down. Right, but, you know, I mean, there's been people, including Lamoriello, have come out and said that he didn't think he deserved a suspension. And How was that even? How was that? I mean, is he just speaking because he's got the Devil's hat on? I mean,
well, yeah, because let's face it, if you're a criminal defense lawyer and you're defending a mobster, come on, look at him. He's a nice boy.
Right. I mean? But, you know, you can say that you feel that the suspension was too harsh. Not that he didn't deserve a suspension.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, I mean, he laid him out so badly.
The kid may not play again. He may not play again. His career might be over.
I mean, the you just look at the video to lead with an elbow and smash someone in the face. I mean, we've had the discussion, well, was it really a bad hit? You know, it was kind of questionable. He got his shoulder, and this was no question whatsoever.
That was Hanson Brothers at their best.
Right, I mean, exactly.
Slap shot.
Exactly. Yeah. There was no.
I think even the Hanson Brothers might have been a little queasy after seeing the aftermath.
Yeah, you know,
that was brutal.
That looked a little late, you know.
Yeah. it was a bad hit. You know, I mean, this argument that it was like, he said afterwards it was a reflex action. Come on.
Oh.
You know?
If that's a reflex action,
yeah, I know.
I don't know.
No. That's it. So,
you know.
Then that speaks to his mental state. If that's what his version of a reflex action is, then he needs to redefine what his reflexes are.
No, absolutely. And I think that's really where the debate comes down to, because now it's not only, you know, the issue has to, you know, it goes beyond the concussions and this kind of thing, but hits to the head, it's like, the debate about this and legislating or doing something about it is that if you're going to get players that are going to be so, you know, dismissive of the consequences, and this is just a reflex, it can't happen. I mean, this is a serious, serious problem. I mean, when a kid at 18 years old basically, you know, loses his career or potentially loses his career for an incident that shouldn't happen. I mean, you know, okay, like Blackburn, we were talking earlier, that was a freak accident.
Yeah, of
different story. But this was a deliberate, premeditated, he says, no, it's not a reflex. It was deliberate, anyway, at the very least, if not premeditated.
Right.
And it could cost a kid a career.
Yeah, and
you have to be able to deal with something like that.
Yeah, and the comments that came out for the suspension, he said, you know, or before the suspension, I think he said, you know, I'll honor whatever they say. I feel badly, and I hope that he has a speedy recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the suspension came out, he almost said the same exact thing. And it's like, it's kind of hard to dig into this guy's remorse if it looks like he's just reading a prepared statement
from his agent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That I mean, almost literally word for word. You know,
right.
the same comment.
Do you remember Patrick Kane when he came to Team USA camp after the Buffalo incident? I'm very sorry.
Sorry,
I apologize to all the
yes.
fans of Buffalo, and I really regret doing. Thank you, no questions.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
You know, but at least that the only person he was hurting. Well, I mean, I guess they roughed up the
cabbie. Yeah.
So yeah.
But
more
you know,
there,
the thing. You know,
it's been a weird year.
No, but here's the thing: the real danger, I think, in all this, and it goes. You see this, and more parents are concerned about their kids playing hockey. And the thing is, if you discourage parents, or if parents are just going to discourage their kids from getting involved in this game because the potential for injury, I mean, the potential for injury in football is great too. And,
yeah.
and the NFL.
Sure, and they have hit to the head.
And they're starting to address that
well.
Too.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the thing is, you know, if you get to a point where you need, you know, if parents are going to stop or are going to keep their kids from playing this because of the potential injury, that doesn't bode well for your future, you know, chain of development.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, but what about, let's get back to Lamoriello, though. Does he really have a leg to stand in this situation?
In what sense?
In the sense that, you know, does his comment carry any weight, saying, you know, he doesn't feel any suspension? Is anybody going to take that under consideration and apply that to anything? Let's go to the flip side and say that it wasn't speculation. Let's say a team in general does something like this and moves the player into a different league, so going from the Q to, say, the AHL, where he can play. I mean, should there be something in play to make that kind of a move illegal? Not from a legal standpoint.
I know what I get what you're saying. I kind of think that it's a valid point that if you have some of these situations where, whether it be kids or guys in the minors, you know, getting if it warrants a suspension that's season long, 20 games, whatever, they should have to sit it out regardless of league. I think it would be good for the NHL and these other leagues to kind of have some sort of alliance to say, okay, let's respect each other's suspensions. Not that I think you're ever going to have a situation where an NHL player gets a long-term suspension and they say, well, we're going to send him to the minors, you know, or just he's going to go overseas or whatever. But, you know, maybe that works for overseas as well. Or maybe, let's say that this incident happened before the World Juniors. Maybe the IIHF says, okay, he's suspended from his league. You're not playing in the World Juniors. You know, just something to really – I think it would hold more weight, especially with some of these, you know, hits to the head or really, you know, violent incidents.
The competition suspension.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Well, I mean, it's similar. I mean, it's different because of the infractions that were broken. Mm-hmm. But when Manny Ramirez got his 50-game or whatever suspension for steroids – but he was allowed to play in the minors for, you know, right, exactly. You know, here you're letting the guy, you know, continue to hone his craft and play and get better and work on things so that he didn't really miss time.
Yeah.
You know, how much better would Ramirez have been if he had to sit out and go into that first game back cold?
Right.
Yeah.
I think, especially in this case with the juniors, like, you know, in this case, the Devils own the rights to the player. So if they wanted, they could have signed him. They could have done.
But is he under contract?
He's not under contract.
Okay. At least that's what I'm saying. They could have signed him.
Let's face it. If they would have signed him, it's also 1 year of his pro eligibility. So that's another reason you don't necessarily sign him right away. But the thing is this. They don't have to respect the junior Canadian Hockey League, all the junior leagues' decisions in this case. But the fact is that the Canadian junior leagues are still the best development feeder systems for the NHL, and it would do nobody any good to undermine their authority in any case. And I think if anybody even, you know, leaned that way, I think the NHL would subtly remind them that we still have, even if it's not a formalized, required, you know, relationship, I mean, there are, you know, boundaries that you should not cross.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's just, you know, it's almost disappointing to hear that, you know, they were contemplated. Elements were thought about, you know. But, I mean, I guess
some reporters were.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you don't think that might have been discussed somewhere along the...
Oh, yeah, because it's always an option. It's always an option.
Right,
you have to explore. Can he do this? Yeah, if you really want to, he could. Yeah. So.
And the overarching issue of the NHL or hockey continuing to shoot itself in the foot, you know, just takes one more bullet and one more shot and gets rid of one more toe as we continue to move on. And hopefully we won't destroy any hotel rooms at the Olympics this year. We'll have some sort of a positive spin coming out of the Olympics to make – going right, because I mean, if you really look at it, what we've got coming up is very exciting.
It's going to be super great hockey.
Right into the trade deadline, always exciting. Right into the playoff push, which goes into the playoffs, and then we crown a Stanley Cup champion in June, and you know, everybody is happy. So if they kind of forget all the transgressions, the Burrows, and the lack of conversations, right? You know, just not to get into that topic, but you know, the press conference, you know, not speaking in the press conferences, and all the hits to the head, and
the Patrick Kanes, and
all these things that have happened over the last 12 months. If we could just focus in on the good that we've got coming up for hockey, I think we're going to be in for a great ride.
I agree.
All right, so we're going to wrap up this edition of the Odd Man Rush. One of our
Did we stay under
an
hour?
We did good. We did. So for Aaron Brown and Wes Goldstein, this is Greg Simoulakis saying we'll talk to you soon.